31-28. In that game, Bradford and UW star Melvin Gordon scored one touchdown but picked up only a total of 15 rushing yards for the game. Once again, the Chargers lose to the Patriots 41-28. In the second game, the Eagles lost to the Saints 20-14. So the conference championship games are now all set for next Sunday. The Los Angeles Rams will meet the New Orleans Saints for the NFC title. That game is at 2:40. The Kansas City Chiefs meet New England for the AFC title. That game is set for 5:40. In the NBA, the Bucks beat Atlanta 133-114. The Bulls were off. Both teams are off tonight. In the NHL, the Blackhawks off last night. They skate in New Jersey tonight. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service for this Monday, January 14th. A cloudy day. They just recently revised the forecast, incidentally. A cloudy day, seasonal temperatures, and a high of 33. Here are the numbers now. Wind is from the southwest at 5. 27 degrees were seen, 26 this morning in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath, 8:11. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. We are spending the next few minutes of WGTD's Morning Show with one of Racine's most renowned citizens, renowned young citizens. As a matter of fact, he is an entrepreneur, and he is 12 years old. I have a feeling that some of you know who I am talking about, because there aren't too many 12-year-old entrepreneurs in Racine or anywhere, for that matter. His name is Alex Hart Wapendo, and Alex has a marvelous, intriguing company called Build-A-Bow, and they specialize in bow ties. And it's also a company through which you can actually have a bow tie custom designed for yourself. And this is a really important undertaking for Alex on a lot of different levels. And we're going to be talking about the circumstances which prompted him to create this company. He is in our studios, and with him as well is his mother, Kari Wapendo, who herself has been a part of the fashion industry, so that gives us some sense of where Alex's talent and interest comes from. And Alex already last year was given a special service award from Gateway Technical College as part of Gateway's celebration of Martin Luther King. And that has happened once again this year, this time from the Martin Luther King Center in Racine. Alex has received their Junior Civil Service Award. And so that is what is prompting this invitation to Alex to join us on the Morning Show to talk about this really exciting undertaking and the difference that he is already making in his community and in the world. Alex Hart Wapendo and Kari Wapendo, we welcome both of you to the Morning Show.
Thank you so much.
And I want to make sure I acknowledge Heidi Hart, who is driver and assistant and who helped make this interview happen and got you here safe and sound.
Yes.
Glad everybody is here for the Morning Show. So, Alex, it's not everybody who starts their own company, and it's a very interesting reason why you felt prompted to do this. Tell our listeners where this all began.
Well, I actually started my company after I was being bullied in school. And the reason why I was being bullied in school was because I tested as gifted, and I was also on the spectrum for autism. And that's what led to me being bullied. So I was called names like nerd and dork, beat up on the bus, and I had a very low self-esteem. So I decided to take the negative term nerd and turn it into something positive and fashionable. Bow ties.
So it was something that you were already kind of interested in? That is, you liked what a bow tie looked like and you felt better when you were wearing one?
Yeah, my mom actually taught me how to design bow ties ever since I was 5 years old. And I realized that creating bow ties and making art was actually an outlet for me. And that's what kind of sparked the idea for making bow ties for Build-A-Bow.
Fantastic. I want to bring your mom, Kari, in to tell us more kind of about the genesis of all this. First of all, though, explain to our listeners about your own interest in fashion and some of the work that you yourself have done in this field.
Yeah, so I was raised by my grandmother, who was a seamstress, and she lost mobility around age of 30 due to meningitis.
Ah.
So she used to teach me, since I was about 6 years old, how to sew Vogue patterns. But it wasn't for my interest. It was for her own interest because she still wanted to wear the Vogue prints, but she lost mobility, paralyzed on her right side.
Mm.
So she pretty much used me as like her right arm. And in the process, I learned how to sew from sewing with her. And then I realized I really loved fashion. One of the first people I seen doing fashion, they had Ebony Fashion Fair, and I remember she took me there, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. Like, I want to be part of this industry in some way. And I've always loved art. So fast forward, I created my own business called Kari Couture, because everybody would always call me Mrs. Couture as like the running joke, because I was always overdressed for everything, and I always made my own stuff and always had Alex in bow ties, just doing the most, is what people say. So I was like, I'm going to adopt that phrase, Kari Couture. And I started my own boutique, and I ran it for probably 6 years, and I finished my tenure in fashion design last year in New York Fashion Week with Alex. We both were selected to participate in New York Fashion Week, and I felt as a designer, it's one of the top places you can go in fashion design is to be in New York Fashion Week. Fortunately, Alex, at the age of 10, got to be there sooner than I waited my whole life to be in Fashion Week.
Yeah.
So not jealous at all. But I felt like that was I made it to where I wanted to be at. And I've helped a lot of people. We've donated hundreds of prom dresses to girls. And I just felt like this is my time where now I can help my energy and focus to help run his business. Because it came to a point where it became to be overwhelming.
Right.
And I was like, I need to take a step back from my brand and I need to focus on his because it's his time now.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell us from your perspective about the creation of Build-A-Bow when this was happening with Alex, the painful experience he was having with bullying and so on. Was this kind of an idea you had that this might be a way for him to kind of rise above that?
So not really. So it kind of happened strangely. I really taught Alex to make bow ties as a way to get him out of my hair. I know that sounds crazy, but I was a single mom at the time, and having a boy, I knew nothing to do with boys. I was like a girly girl. And I was sewing, making designs and garments for customers. What are you doing with a child when you're sitting at a sewing machine for 6 hours?
Right.
So I taught him how to make a simple pattern, which was a pillowcase and a bow tie. So he would sew on his little sewing machine, and I would sew on mine. But I realized when he got about 8 and a half, he had a sketchbook. And he was like really, really crazy designs of bow ties, like butterflies and birds and just things I've never seen before. He's like, I want to make a business out of this. And I was like, okay, you know, whatever, that's fine. Yeah, when you get 18, you can do it. He's like, no, I want to do it now. And I'm like, no, like kids, we're going to focus on school. And then when you get out of school, then you can do that. He's like, why? And then I started thinking, I'm like, yeah, why? Why can't we? So I was like, okay, show me your stuff and give me your pitch. Like, show me why you want to do this. And he created his little pitch. He created a cardboard sign and showed me what he was going to do and what he was going to sketch and how he was going to do it. And I was like, okay. And he started sharing his designs on Instagram and Facebook. And then from there, it kind of went viral. A couple celebrities seen his designs on Instagram. And then I was getting calls like a week later, like, hey, I seen this kid. He shared some bow ties on Instagram. And we went to fly him out to New York. And I was like, what is happening? So it's like it happened. And I always feel like you're always at the right place at the right time. Mm. Like, whatever your destiny is, it's going to be, it is what it is. And I feel like I just didn't push against that. I just let it happen. As scary as it was, I just let it happen. Because I'm like, you know what? This is his outlet. He's sewing and he's creating art as an outlet. He's battled through depression and suicidal thoughts because of being autistic and not grasping things fast as other children and just being ostracized and different because he likes to read and write versus doing what they say boys should be doing. He wasn't good at sports. He didn't like doing any of those typical boy things. And I was like, you know what? This is his thing. This is who he is. Like, this is happening, and this is what it's going to be.
You just got out of the way and let it happen. Yeah. Well, the whole world is really glad you did, of course. So, for those of you just joining us, we have in the studios today Alex Hart Wapendo and his mom, Kari Wapendo, and we're talking about Alex's business, which is called Build-A-Bow, and their specialty is bow ties. And actually, not just bow ties for people, but bow ties for dogs also, right?
Yes, bark bows.
Yeah. So anyway, and we're going to talk in just a little bit about some of the special ways in which you get other people involved in your business. So tell us about the first bow ties that you actually made. And were those first bow ties also your own design? I mean, right from the start, have you been designing your own?
Yes, so the first bow ties that I ever made were actually my own designs. I sewed them myself, and there were actually these different types of print I got from clothing and stuff like that. Made sure I washed it really well. So I made sure I washed it really, really well, and then I ended up using that fabric print to end up making my bow ties.
So you were taking, like, pieces of clothing you used to wear? Is that what you mean? Okay.
How? And also, people also used to donate some things to me. So I made sure I use that as well.
Interesting. So tell us about the kind of the overall design of your, are most of your bow ties sort of shaped the same and roughly the same size? Or is there even variation in terms of that from bow tie to bow tie?
Well, bow ties could come in any shapes and sizes. So some of my bow ties are kind of like the same size, but they all have different types of patterns, designs, accessories even on them. But when I really want to bring out my crazy, I'm doing a fashion tour or something, that's when I really, really bring out the crazy in bow ties.
And if people go to your website and just Google you, you'll see some wonderful patterns that are that are there. So tell us about where you do this. You do this, you have your own space at your home?
Yes, I actually have an office where I do all the paperwork and stuff. And I have a bow tie making room, which is my main factory place where I go to actually design and sometimes make the bow ties.
Wow.
I actually have a dye sublimation press machine in there, and that's going to help me make the bow ties a lot faster for a new process.
Ah, excellent. What is typically the design process like for you? I mean, are you just sitting in a quiet corner with a empty piece of paper and a pencil and just sketching, or does the design process happen in some different way for you?
Well, usually the design process for me happens when I go in my art room, my bow tie making room, where the magic happens. I grab myself a piece of paper and a pencil, and I sketch about what bow ties could, you know, really exceed. And I see patterns in everyday things that I could use on my bow ties.
Hmm.
So, for example, actually on my website, I'm selling a monarch butterfly bow tie. And obviously, I got that pattern from a monarch butterfly. Patterns I saw in everyday things.
Hmm. And so you found fabric someplace that had monarch butterflies in it?
I actually made the fabric myself, and I actually designed it to be like an actual monarch. I got this black piece of fabric, and I used to hand paint it all by myself, and it used to take me like 3 hours to make.
Each monarch bow tie used to take him 3.5 hours to make, and that's why we had, when we teamed up with another company, a Forbes 30 Under 30 company that's owned by Henry Berner, who's a 15-year-old entrepreneur himself that also has what people would consider disability. He created a lanyard company. So him and Henry teamed up, and they were able to take one of his best-selling things that was taking him 3 hours to just make one of them and turn it into a two-minute process with a dye sublimation press and some other things that are patented that we can't speak about.
Yeah.
Right. So that allows, in a sense, for if not mass production, quick production.
Yeah, correct.
Otherwise,
to
we would
keep up with the supply and the demand.
Right, yeah, because otherwise customers. We're talking about many, many hours of work just to create, for instance,
one.
We
like
learned
a
the hard
sweatshop.
Way. That bow tie went viral and it ended up getting into GQ magazine. And he ended up getting so many orders for this bow tie that I ended up taking it off the website because he couldn't keep up. It's only him. He's a designer by himself.
I was a sweatshop.
Right.
And I was like, we can't fulfill these orders. Like, we got to figure something out.
Yeah. So then we teamed up with Buttonsmith and Henry, and we created this new process. And now I can keep up with the supply and demand of my bow ties.
Right. Yeah. So in a typical week, I mean, you probably can only roughly estimate this, but in a typical week, how many orders are you receiving of people ordering bow ties? I mean,
sometimes it could be 5, sometimes it could be 10, 20, 15. You know, it depends how the traffic's going, you know. Sometimes
a
whole
orders too. Yeah. So sometimes he can get an Amazon order from a business orders. That wants 300 bow ties, and then it pushes back the production.
Yeah.
But normally around, like, I'd say Valentine's Day.
Like major holidays, as I should say. Major holidays.
Things get a little bit busy.
Yeah. Yeah, like Valentine's Day, Christmas.
Yeah, right. Christmas is a big one. Yeah.
Now, when are you typically focusing your energy on this? I mean, are you spending some time on Build-A-Bow 7 days a week and certain hours of the day or certain hours of the evening?
Yeah,
I mean, when are you doing this?
So my daily schedule is actually, I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I usually see what's going on with my company, work on some bow tie orders, get some paperwork done, stuff like that. Go to school, come back from school, do my homework if I have any, eat dinner, and work on more bow tie orders. And then I sleep and I repeat the process.
Literally.
Yeah.
And then while he's at school and he gets to do that school stuff, me and his dad, his dad is the COO, and then his grandmother is the customer care coordinator, Heidi, who's here. And then we are scheduling interviews and fulfilling orders because he also does Amazon fulfillment. So we have to run that shipment as well as a shipment from his website. So we're dropping off orders, we're packaging orders, we're going through inventory, we're doing quality control checks to make sure that sometimes in the days he's tired that his strings aren't loose and that his bow ties are up to par so that he can keep his 5-star review on Google and Facebook.
Right.
And we're responding to customers' emails, and then he's running his community workshop program, which is another beast in itself.
Yeah,
so
we'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, there's a lot of pots on the stove, and it sounds like they're all cooking really, really well at the moment. Alex, do you enjoy this as much now as you did when it was just something you were doing completely for yourself at home? I mean, do you enjoy it just as much?
I still really, really enjoy it. It's really amazing, and it's an outlet for me. When I create art, it makes me happy, and I think about, well, this can make other people happy as well.
Right. Do you think about expanding into other kinds of clothing, other kinds of accessories, for instance, or do you feel like, at least for the time being, you want the focus to remain on bow ties specifically?
For the time being, I specifically want to remain on bow ties, but in the future, I may branch off into some other types, but still try to include my bow tie section as well. And the really main purpose behind this is my story.
Right, absolutely. And we're glad we're able to hear that story today. For those of you just joining us, I have with me in the studio Alex Hart Wapendo and his mom, Kari Wapendo, and we are talking about the business that Alex has created with the help of his family, a business called Build-A-Bow, and they focus on the creation of amazing bow ties and also custom-made bow ties. So it's not just that you go on his website and see the amazing things that Alex has designed that you can purchase, but you can also, in collaboration with Alex, maybe design something of your own. Is that correct?
Yes.
How does that typically work? How do people typically create
like
a custom
bow tie?
Yeah. How does that typically work?
Well, they tell me what they want on it on my website, or if people don't really want a custom one, they could usually just go on my website, order a bow that they see and they like, go on Amazon, because I'm now currently on Amazon as well.
Right.
But basically, they usually tell me what they want on their bow tie, like any types of accessories, design patterns, stuff like that. And then I create like a sketch design of it and I send it to them. And I'm currently working on a new process for that so it could be way more quicker and efficient.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Your mom was saying something about the...
The website's going to be changing the next 3 weeks here. So you're going to be having an interactive part on the website. So the process won't be so long where Alex is sketching the design, sending it back to the customer for review. Oh, no, I don't like this change. But you'll be able to see it directly on the screen and confirm your proof right on the screen.
Like
and
then, see all different types of patterns, accessories you could add on
it. Upload your company logo, whatever you want. Any Build-A-Boat, you can literally create any design you can think of. Anything you can humanly think of, Alex can create it.
Wow. What would be a couple of the oddest things that people have asked for that they want in a bow tie or want their bow tie to look like? Or is that
asking
a long
him about odd things when he loves crazy designs.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, do any come to mind
that have been unique?
Yeah. Any come to mind that have been especially interesting, or are there just so many it's hard to say?
There are really just so many of them that it's really just hard to say. They're all cool, crazy, awesome, wacky in their own
way. People want, like, pictures of their pets.
Yeah, pets on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they want, like, their company name with a bunch of crazy design patterns on it.
Fabric. Yeah. Ellen DeGeneres ordered a cotton candy
bow tie. That was probably the oddest.
Really?
A cotton candy bow tie.
A cotton candy bow tie.
And it literally looked like cotton candy.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you can't eat it, though. You can't eat it. It's not edible.
Note to self. Note to self.
So kids out there, try not to eat. Just don't eat it.
So you do this thing that involves some community outreach that is one of the really coolest things that I think that you do. You do a community workshop once a month, and it's something that is free of charge. Explain what happens at these community workshops.
So I started a community workshop program after my grandfather passed away from cancer. And it really made me sad. But before he died, I used to give him like little gifts like beer and chocolate. And I thought about how it made him happy. So I thought about if I can make gifts for other people who are suffering from incurable diseases, how happy would they be? Mm. And that's what kind of sparked the idea for Build-A-Bow for a Purpose. So I host workshops. And basically, I have the community come in, create bow ties for people who are battling from incurable diseases and letting them know that they're not alone. Mm. I have them write nice letters and notes saying that you can get through this. You're awesome. You're absolutely amazing. And I let their imagination run loose, run wild.
In terms of what they want to design.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I teach them how to create the designs on the bows, and it's just really amazing.
Cool. And then you help with these bow ties don't just get designed, but then they get constructed. They get made.
Into bow ties. And I send them to people who have incurable diseases. And I actually determine where these bow ties go depending on the month. So, for example, September is childhood cancer awareness. October is breast cancer awareness. And each month is associated with a disease. And that's what helps me determine where these bow ties go.
Wow. Love that idea. Really cool. So, I understand, and your mom's already...
I just want to clarify that Alex wasn't buying the beer. So.
Oh, I wasn't buying the beer. No,
oh, for your grandpa.
I wasn't buying the beer.
No, all right. That's good to know.
No, of course I wouldn't.
So,
you guys know that, right?
Right. So,
don't call 911, please.
So as your mom mentioned earlier in the interview, she and you had the experience of going to Fashion Week in New York. So first of all, and maybe both of you can kind of share this story together, how did that come about? How does one get invited to be part of New York Fashion Week?
Well, I think we sent our we did a submission for a company that was going to be featuring designers in New York Fashion Week. And normally how that works, if you want to be part of a fashion show, you have to send in a designer submission. And that normally is your portfolio of designs you've done and kind of the style that you would like to show and your design concept. So he found out that I was applying for New York Fashion Week, and I was so super excited about it. And he's like, oh, I want to apply too. And I was like, what? And I was like, okay. And then I got the email back. You got the email back
first. Yeah, I got the email back
first. So I was like salty because I was like, wait, like I sent my submission in like 2 weeks before yours.
Guys, she was jealous. She was hating. She was like, guys.
Oh, boy.
And then they gave me my submission. I was like, okay, cool. So then we found out we were both being featured in New York Fashion Week, just different times of the show, different segments of the show. So I think I was like the seventh designer to be featured, and Alex was towards the end of the show. But we turned it into a family affair because our younger son, Avon, is Alex's junior brand ambassador, and my husband is Alex's adult brand ambassador for the brand. So he featured
they're both pretty
good
looking models.
Yep. He featured both of them in his line, and then I featured my husband in my line.
There
so
you go.
We all went to New York as a family. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it was crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So, Alex, what bow ties were shown at New York Fashion Week? What? How many bow ties, or was it just one?
No, I actually had different models to sport each bow tie. Mm-hmm. So there were bow ties for each of them. I had some really crazy designs, like a bow tie that had like crystals popping out of it, like a 3D design.
Ah.
Also, I had like a transformer type bow tie, like with the. It had like different types of shapes on it, and they're like all connecting in some way.
Wow.
And, like, my designs were just over the top. They were wild.
Wow.
You had 10 models.
Yeah.
What is that game that you made? You made one that looked like that game that you play where you try to.
Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. A fidget spinner bow tie.
Yeah, a fidget spinner bow tie.
a wired bow tie with the QR code on it.
Yep.
Somebody ended up buying that.
Yeah. Wow. You made a peacock one.
Yeah.
What else did you make?
The bow tie with the zipper on it where you could like hide your candy and money and stuff in it.
Yeah, put gummy worms in it, and at the end of the runway, the model ate some gummy worms out of the bow tie. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So it sounds like you tried to make the most of a big moment like that where your work was going to be in the spotlight for all kinds of people to see. So when you go to something like New York Fashion Week, is it an experience where you get to have some feedback? I mean... is that part of the experience?
It was so overwhelming. Like, I don't think that we slept that off until like 3 weeks later. Like, it was so overwhelming because when we both got to New York Fashion Week, like, I'm usually with Alex because Alex is the founder and like I'm the CEO, so we work together. He calls me the momager, so anything he does, like, I'm right with him and helping him. But because I had to prepare for my own line, like, we didn't get to work together. So we were literally like side by side, but not working together. Like, we were both focused on our own line.
Right.
So we went and we sat, 4 hours we sat in New York?
Yeah.
And we went through 1,500 models. We sat there with cue cards and watched 1,500 models try out to work for our show. So he had to pick his own 10 models and I had to pick my own 10 models. And then after that, there was interviews after the show and photographers. One of the articles ended up going viral for Huffington Post. They wrote an article on him. Mm-hmm. And,
I saw that.
Yeah.
And some of the photographs really captured some of those
very
out of
the
ordinary
ties. It was really overwhelming and just like, it felt very surreal.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't need to tell you my age. But I've been waiting to go to New York Fashion Week since I was 8 years old, okay? So me being there and then being there with my son and then my husband and then seeing like my family is here. We're at New York Fashion Week.
Like, oh my gosh.
I still I get goosebumps because I'm like, wow, we really did that.
Like,
that
we made it to the top.
Yeah, that's kind of the pinnacle of the whole business.
Yeah.
So, Alex, where do you see this going from here? Or do you feel like for the time being, your business doesn't particularly like need to grow or need to change? Do you feel like it's the way it is right now is in a sense fully satisfying? Or are there things you want to do differently or other things you want to do on top of it?
Well, for now, I think my company is doing pretty good, but I might branch off into some other things in the future. I might change a few things up in the near future, but for now, I guess I'll just see where the wind takes me.
Well, the wind has taken you into some very, very exciting places, that's for sure. When you are in the middle of a humdrum day at school, what are your favorite courses? What courses in school do you enjoy the most?
Reading. I really, really, really enjoy reading class. Hmm. It's really amazing. I really love that class. I love to read some type of fantasy books, stuff like that. I like to read.
Okay. And then
science too.
Oh, okay. How about when you get to art class? Is art, other kinds of artistic endeavor also interesting to you, or is just making bow ties?
I actually do not have art for this grade. I will get the chance to do it next year, but right now I'm currently doing tech ed.
Oh, okay.
So I get to work with the 3D printers, use the computers.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
laser
cool, too.
Laser engravers.
Full right.
Mode. Yeah.
Well, I could see how that might really beautifully fold into this work. So I want to circle back to why all of this began. And I want to give you a chance to really spell it out for our listeners because I think it's something really worth talking about. All of this began for kind of a painful reason because you experienced some bullying. And for any of us who have been on the wrong end of bullying, we know how painful that can be. So explain to our listeners why designing and building and wearing your own bow ties helped with that. In what ways has that and does that continue to help you?
Well, making bow ties makes me happy, makes me feel unique. I like to stand out a lot. I like to create art. That's one outlet for me I love to do. I like to sew. It's truly amazing. My mom taught me how to sew. And it's just been an outlet for me ever since.
Right. So it's something that you are really good at and you feel good doing it.
Yeah. I like to stand out, be unique.
Yeah.
Wear my creations.
Absolutely.
I think one of the main things that I remember Alex telling me, because I was like, why bow ties? Like, I know that's one of the things I taught you how, but I also taught you to make pillowcases. So why not pillowcases? And I think it was because he said, one of the things you said to me that stood out, Alex, was you said, you know, when I was being bullied, I felt like the world didn't see me. Mm-hmm. You know, when you got your diagnosis and they said, I think it really hit him. It's something different when you know you're different and you don't know what's wrong with you and you feel like you're different than other kids. But then when somebody comes and says, hey, like, you're autistic, and then it's like, oh, so I am different. This is what's wrong with me.
Mm.
And I think for him, he kind of took a step back and was like, I felt like nobody paid attention to me. But when I was wearing a bow tie, people would say, hey, kid, nice bow tie, you know, looking snazzy, kid. And those type of comments are what helped him to really bring confidence. And he was like, this is a conversation starter, because when I'm wearing a bow tie, people are noticing me.
Right.
Like, people see who I am and they want to talk to me, versus when I go into a room and I'm being ignored because I'm fidgeting or I'm stimming and I'm missing verbal cues because of the autism and I can't focus. And I'm just like, this is not just an outlet for him, but I think it's helping him to be able to communicate with people and connect with people, because he has friends all over the world that he's made connection with, and people that are battling through suicide and depression, and other autistic kids that are publishing books now because of his book. And I just think it's that ongoing cycle of kindness and speaking to somebody and being able to connect, that's the main purpose of this business. And Alex always says, if it doesn't speak from the heart first, I'm not doing it. I always say to people that Alex is not just an entrepreneur, he's a social entrepreneur. If it doesn't speak to his heart first, he's not going to do it.
Right. In other words, you're not in this for making money. I mean, you're making some money doing it, but that's not why you're doing it.
I like to see the smiles on people's faces.
Right.
I like to see making them happy.
Absolutely. And of course, another thing that sets this apart is that there's nothing wrong with somebody wanting to walk into a room and be wearing something that kind of makes a unique statement and kind of lets them sort of shine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another thing when that crazy, wonderful, unique thing you're wearing is something you created.
Yeah.
It's not just, I wear lots of crazy ties, but I buy them in stores, mostly. And I can't say, look at my tie, I made this. All I can say is, look at this tie, I bought it. But you can say, look at this bow tie, I designed this, and I made it. This is my bow tie.
It's my creation.
Absolutely. And I think that's absolutely terrific. So it's so exciting to see this, and it's so exciting to meet you after hearing so much about you and the great work that you have done. So if people are interested in seeing the kind of bow ties that you have designed and that you are selling, or want to explore the possibility of getting something custom designed with your assistance, what should they do? What website do you want to direct them to?
Well, I would like to direct you guys to my website to get some bow ties. I'm also on Amazon, and as well as you can get my book. My book on Blur Publishing Company or Apple iTunes. My website is www.buildabowbyalex.com.
Right. Buildabowbyalex.com. And bow, of course, is like bow tie.
Yep. Yes.
B-O-W. So buildabowbyalex.com.
You could also find me on Amazon as well.
I'm sure. And so there on his website, you'll see the big line of products, and you'll see the words sold out besides quite a few of them. So that tells us that business is booming and that you are working hard to try to keep up with all of the interest. And a nice biography there that tells Alex's story. And again, we congratulate you that you have been recognized by yet another community organization. It's really something when at the age of 12, you already have a trophy case that's bulging with trophies and placards and honors that people are giving you to tell you how much we appreciate what you are doing in this community. And we just wish you much more continued success and continued happiness in the years ahead. And thank you for coming to WGTD and being part of the morning show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Alex Hart Wapendo. And we should mention that the last name Wapendo is Swahili for love conquers all.
Yep.
What a great thought. And his mom, Kari Wapendo, with him as well. And Heidi Hart, who helped make the interview possible. Great to have all of you here at the morning show. Thanks again.
Thank you.
8:45, the time at WGTD, your gateway to public radio. Here's part two from the morning show archives. We're going to be taking a very interesting look at American history for the next few minutes with Jennifer Armstrong, who is one of the authors of a wonderful book which has in mind young readers. The book is called The American Story, 100 True Tales from American History. And in this beautiful, colorfully illustrated book, a young person, in primarily grades 4 to 7, can explore some of the most interesting moments in American history and can really get a sense of how our country came into being with some of the notable figures along the way. We're going to be talking with Jennifer Armstrong about some of the special challenge of crafting something like this, since, of course, our own history is not all that simple a story. And how does one craft this effectively for young readers? The book is published by Knopf Books for Young Readers. And again, it is called The American Story, 100 True Tales from American History. And Jennifer Armstrong, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Glad to have you with us. Ahead of co-authoring this book, had you ever tackled any kind of assignment similar to this?
Well, first of all, if I may correct you, I am the author. I'm not the co-author.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see another name here, and I thought
that's the illustrator.
Oh, of course. That's right.
And, yes, I have written many, many books for young readers, and many of them have been historical in their theme, either historical fiction or historical nonfiction. But none of them have been exactly like this kind of big treasury or compendium of bits and pieces from the last 400 years. This is unique.
Right.
In my experience.
And a big but exciting challenge, I'm sure, to try to... embrace this whole CIS story and whole history.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you a question which I've asked other authors before when a book happens to be 100 words that every college graduate should know or 100 places you should visit before you die. Or
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of making these titles
sure.
up off the top of my head, but I've asked before and I'm going to ask you, why 100? I mean, did you enjoy working with that particular number, and was it a challenge to come up with 100 different stories to tell this bigger story well?
Right. Well, 100 is a convenient number. It's a, as you've just alluded to, a lot of people make, top 100 lists. So 100 was a nice kind of grand dramatic number to select. Now, selecting just 100 stories from American history was a huge challenge because, there is an infinite number of wonderful, exciting, or dramatic stories to choose from. And so the challenge was to try to create almost like a portrait of the United States. Not by selecting the most famous stories, the stories that everybody has heard over and over and over, but selecting some of those famous stories and then also some less well-known stories in an attempt to create a more complex or more unexpected portrait of the country.
That's one of the things I most appreciate about this, is that there are big stories here, and then there are a few smaller stories, and all of them are important in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it unfolds in a way that the typical history book maybe doesn't. I mean, it helps us remember that our history is a lot more than our famous generals or
exactly.
or our big presidents.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that I have run across over the years that I've been writing books for kids, particularly books that are historical in their theme, is that a lot of people say, "Ugh, I hate history," or "History is so boring. All those dates, all those facts." And I have always been astonished by that attitude, because I've always loved history, and I've always thought of history as stories about other people, just as novels are stories about other people. The historical stories happen to be stories about other people who really did live. And so I think that one of the most fun ways to experience history is by experiencing it through the eyes of an individual who lived through an experience 100 years ago, or 200 years ago, or 10 years ago. Mm. So that's how I tried to create this picture, not by just listing what were the famous wars, and what were the causes of the war, and what were the major exports of this particular state,
right.
Which, you know, is not, it's kind of hard to warm up to stuff like that.
One of the things that's interesting about this book, too, is we read it, and it's really wonderful and interesting to be read, and it's a little hard to figure out what makes it well written for this particular age group. I think we're talking about maybe 10, 11, 12-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of course, have great experience in this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can help us understand, when you are crafting something for instance, this age group, mm-hmm. what guides the way you write? I mean, what sorts of choices do you end up making in terms of what kind of vocabulary, or how long to make the sentences, or that
right.
kind of thing?
Right. Well, unfortunately, I'm not sure I can give you a very useful answer, because I've been doing this for so long that it's rather second nature to me, and it's hard to really decide exactly what it is that I'm deciding
right.
as I'm going along. You know, it's just a kind of how I write automatically. But I will say that I write for the kid that I used to be. Now, that is it's not the majority of kids out there. I was a tremendous reader. I was a good student. I'm smart. So, you know, I read very engaging books when I was young, and I want to create that kind of book for today's young readers. Now, an individual 10 or 11 or 12-year-old might find a particular story a challenge to read, but I have never been one of those people who thought that you should, lower the basketball hoop.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I learned. I read things that were maybe a little bit challenging, or maybe I encountered a vocabulary word that I didn't even know how to pronounce it, maybe, but this is the process of learning to be a reader, is that you learn through context, or you ask somebody, or you look it up, or you just guess, or somehow you through the sort of the gestalt of the entire story, not just the individual sentence, you create a meaning for what you've just read. And I think that is the best service that I can do for children, is to show them more than what they already know.
Hmm. And as I read this, which is, this didn't feel like I was reading a baby book.
No.
I mean, this felt like I was reading a real book, I mean, a real history book. And in many respects, it's a book I wouldn't mind reading myself, and certainly found it interesting. And only once or twice, I sort of caught myself just wondering, what are the choices that get made? What makes this a good book for young readers versus right. just any reader?
Right.
And the answer is that is a rather slippery, maybe entirely invisible line.
Exactly. And the distinction between adult books and books for young readers is in many ways merely a marketing decision. You know, a bookstore or a library has to know what section of the building to put this particular title into. There are many, many readers, adult readers, who read, for example, what are referred to as young adult novels, which can be just as complex and emotionally and psychologically interesting and rewarding as some of the best novels written for adults. So it's really kind of an artificial distinction. If it's interesting, anybody's going to enjoy reading it. The only real distinction I think that is useful when you're talking about children's books are books that are written for very new readers, where you really do have to be pretty vigilant about the vocabulary, the complexity of the sentence structure, maybe some of the complexity of some of the ideas. Mm. But once you're talking about a kid in, you know, fifth grade and up who's a reader, I don't really make a lot of concessions to, oh, well, I don't know if this kid is going to know this word. I figure if they're reading this book, they'll figure it out.
One thing interesting that I very much appreciated is the fact that as I first picked up the book, I wondered if this was going to be sugar-coated American history. Mm-hmm. And you seem to have made a point of not making it that.
I don't have a real sweet tooth. I think that, I mean, this is one of the things that I have always stressed whenever I've taught creative writing to people who want to write, say, fiction for young readers, is that adults often have an impulse, and I think it's a generous and caring impulse to protect children or to give them models of, give them exemplars of this is the most wonderful kind of person you could ever meet. But people, even wonderful people, are not that one-dimensional. And so it enhances our appreciation of a character in a novel to recognize the character's flaws or mistakes or dirty little secrets. And I think that the same is true about the character of a nation, is that we're not just about our highest ideals. We're also about maybe some of the mistakes that we've made along the way, the times that we have stumbled off the path. Because when you can see that we have stumbled and we maybe got ourselves back on the path, that is perhaps a much more illuminating and useful thing to demonstrate to kids, rather than an unrealistic, idealized portrait that will potentially make a kid think, well, I could never be that perfect, you know? So showing weaknesses or flaws as well as strengths and the sterling virtues, I think, is honest, and ultimately I think it is kindest.
The book, again, is called The American Story, 100 True Tales from American History. It's published by Knopf Books for Young Readers, and the author, Jennifer Armstrong, Richard Roth, the illustrator, and he's done a wonderful job as well to help bring further to life the very good writing of Jennifer Armstrong. Jennifer Armstrong, I appreciate you joining me today on The Morning Show, and I congratulate you on a wonderful book.
Thank you very much.
Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions.